Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Rates and Lanes with Rico Mohammed. This is the show where we improve your knowledge of the freight market, improve your bottom line, and improve the transportation industry as a whole. We're talking Rates and Lanes. Let's move on down the audio road.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Rico Mohammed. This is the Rates and Lanes podcast, and we want to thank you guys for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us tonight, whether you're listening on the recorded show or whether you live with us live as we are broadcasting tonight. We have with us tonight is normally the night that we have Transportation Law. Hank Seaton is normally our special guest the third Monday of every month, but you could tell I completely got something else on my mind that I want to talk about later. The third Wednesday of every month is usually Hank Seaton's time to spend with us to go over transportation law issues and questions. Hank was not able to make it to be with us tonight, but he was able to make a special call and got Mr. Rick Gobble to pinch hit for us tonight. And you probably know Rick from the Dave Nemo Morning Show. He does a segment with Dave Arrow, I think every other Monday or something like that, transportation, safety, and compliance. So if you got any questions surrounding or pertaining to safety, compliance, ELDs, tonight is the perfect night to get those questions in, and go ahead and press the number one. We will try to get your call screened and get you up and on board to get your question in. But first, without any further ado, this is the Rates and Lanes podcast, so we're going to jump right into what it is that we normally cover. And this week's USDA fruit and vegetable truck rate report is out, and there is a little bit of movement compared to last week. There are no areas that show an outright shortage of trucks. We have several areas that have slight shortages, and those areas that present those opportunities is the South District, California, Central and South Florida, Aroostook County, Maine, and Eastern North Carolina. All of those areas that we just listed off are areas that are identified as having a slight shortage of trucks compared to the demand in those areas. So if you are working that spot market, working the produce market right now, those are some areas that present some opportunities, and you can take advantage of those. Everywhere else on the report is showing that they have that it is an adequate supply of trucks relative to the demand. We will get a copy of this report posted and up and on board on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page for your viewing pleasure here shortly. Jumping over, getting into this week's DAT Trendlines report. Rates moderated last week as capacity returned to the market. Truck post increased for all equipment types. The national average van rate declined by 3 cents per mile, while the average reefer rate fell by 4 cents and flatbed prices held steady. Rates for all three equipment types are still higher than their March averages, and flatbed load to truck ratio has exceeded 100 loads per truck for the past 3 weeks. Taking a little bit more in-depth look into the trend lines report, looking at the van, the dry van demand and capacity portion of the report for the week of April 8th through the 14th, van load post declined by 1%, while truck post increased by 11%. That caused the van load-to-truck ratio to fall by 11%, dropping down to 6.6 loads per truck. The national average rate slipped by 3 cents. Taking a look back historically, the van load-to-truck ratio dipped slightly in March compared to February, but it's still well above the norm for this time of the year. Van load postings increased by 14% in March compared to February, but truck post increased 15%. As a result, the March load-to-truck ratio declined by 2%, dropping down to 6.9 van loads per truck. The March ratio was 116% higher than it was of the same time, March of 2017. the fuel prices increased by 1.9% over the past week. Now the national diesel average price for diesel is $3.10 per gallon nationally. Let's take a look and see how the dry van rates were performing over the previous week of April 8th through the 14th. The average van rate fell by 3 cents, dropping down to an average of $2.21 per mile as truck post increased 11% last week. Still, that's 6 cents higher than the March average and 53 cents higher than a year ago. The load-to-truck ratio for vans declined last week. Taking a look back historically, we already covered a little bit of it, but the national average van rate for March was $2.15 per mile, up 3 cents from February. That's the second highest monthly average, surpassed only by the record high of $2.24 per mile in January of 2018. Last month's rate was 52 cents higher than the average of March 2017, just a year ago. Taking a look around the country, starting out in the northeastern portion of the United States, the average spot market rate for dry vans coming out of the city of Brotherly Love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is $2.26 per mile. Moving down into the southeastern portion of the United States, Atlanta, Georgia shows an average spot market rate of $2.43 per mile. Moving up into the midwestern portion of the United States, Chicago, Illinois checks in, setting the benchmark for dry vans at $2.59 per mile on the spot market. Moving down into the south central portion of the United States, Dallas, Texas shows $2.05 per mile on the spot market. And wrapping up, the dry vans coming out of the left coast, Los Angeles, California, shows $2.31 per mile on average for dry vans. That will wrap up the dry van portion of the DAT Trend Lines report. Let's jump over and look at the flatbed segment for the demand and capacity. Flatbed load postings increased 1% and truck postings increased by 8%. That caused the load-to-truck ratio to decline 7%, dropping down to 103.3 loads per truck. Still slightly below the previous week's record level of 111 loads per truck, the national average flatbed rate was unchanged. So if you are a flatbedder, I mean, you are really in high demand right now. So there's opportunities abound for you if you are a flatbedder. Taking a look back historically, compared to February, flatbed load posts rose 41% in March, while truck posts increased by 3%. That boosted the load-to-truck ratio by 37% compared to the previous month at 90.8 loads per truck. The ratio was 148% higher than in March of 2017. Let's take a look and see how the spot market rates were performing for flatbeds over the previous week. The national average flatbed rate remained at $2.63 per mile for the second week in a row. That's the highest flatbed rate ever recorded in DAT Trendline's history. Capacity, the flatbed market remains extremely tight. Last week, the load-to-truck ratio for flatbeds was 103.3 loads per truck. Taking a look back historically, compared to February, the national average flatbed rate in March increased by 16 cents to $2.53 per mile. Flatbed rates are 50 cents higher than they were the same time March 2017 a year ago. Taking a look around the country for flatbeds, starting out in Harrisburg, PA, we show actually setting the benchmark for flatbeds, $4.02 per mile on the spot market coming out of Harrisburg. Dropping down into the southeastern portion of the United States, Atlanta, Georgia shows an average spot market rate of $3.10 for flatbeds. Moving out Midwest, Rock Island, Illinois, showing $3.61 per mile for flatbeds on average on the spot market. Dropping down to the south central portion of the United States, Houston, Texas is the representative city, showing $2.90 per mile on average on the spot market. And wrapping up, coming out of Phoenix, Arizona, $1.88 per mile on average for spot market rates for flatbeds. Jumping over into the reefer portion of the DAT report for the demand and capacity. Reefer load postings declined by 6%, while truck postings increased 11%. That caused the national load-to-truck ratio for reefers to drop 15%, coming down from 11 loads per truck to 9.4 loads per truck. The national average reefer rate was only 4 cents lower than it was last week. Taking a look back historically, in March, reefer load postings increased 23%, while truck posts added 15% compared to February. That caused the load-to-truck ratio to rise 7% to 10.5 loads per truck. The ratio was up 68% compared to March of 2017, same time last year. Let's take a look at the national spot market reefer rates. For the week of April 8th through the 14th, the national average reefer rate fell 4 cents to $2.44 per mile, which is 4 cents above the March average and 50 cents higher than 1 year ago. The national load-to-truck ratio for reefers also declined last week. In March, historically speaking, in March, the national average reefer rate was $2.40 per mile. That was 1 cent lower than the February average. Compared to March of 2017, the reefer rate was 53 cents higher. Taking a look around the country, starting out in the Northeast, Elizabeth, New Jersey is the representative city, showing an average spot market rate for reefers at $2.20 per mile. Dropping down into the southeastern portion of the United States, Lakeland, Florida, the representative city, showing average spot market rates at $1.84 per mile. Moving up into the Midwest, Green Bay, Wisconsin is that representative city, showing average spot market rates at $3.31, leading the charge across the nation. Dropping down into the south central portion of the United States, McAllen, Texas, coming out of that Rio Grande Valley, $2.47 per mile on average. And coming out of the West Coast, Fresno, California being the representative city, showing an average spot market rate of $2.49 per mile. We will also have that report up and available for you on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page here shortly. And now to the portion of the show where we kind of dread doing it, but it's a necessary thing that we got to cover real quickly. This is the Bad Broker Report. Get the pen and paper ready to write down MC numbers and everything so that you can be prepared. Make sure, hopefully, nobody that you dealt with is on this list. Picking up from last week, AG Specialties LLC. FMCSA shows that their trust fund is canceled. They have over $24,000 in non-payment complaints that have been reported. But Nita Truck Brokers, Inc., their DOT number is 222-3062. MC number is 317-771. FMCSA shows that their trust fund is canceled. They have over $128,000 in non-payment complaints that have been reported. Southeast Service Transportation and Carriers, LLC, that DOT number is 224-4825. That MC number is 685-019. FMCSA shows that their surety bond is canceled as of 2/16/2018. They have over $256,000 in non-payment complaints that have been reported. Old Town Brokerage, Inc., that MC number is 567-053. FMCSA shows trust fund is set for cancellation on 4/11/18. They have over $116,000 and active non-payment complaints that have been reported. Blue Thunder Truck Brokerage, Inc., Blue Thunder Cartage, Inc., that DOT number is 221-5463. MC number is 247-270. Over $24,000 in active non-payment complaints have been reported. Zion Metals, Inc., this is a shipper out of Houston, Texas. Zip code 77036. They have over $32,000 in non-payment complaints that have been reported. Highway One Logistics, Inc. That MC number is 545-342. FMCSA show Shorty Bun is set to cancel on 5/6/18. They have over $62,000 in non-payment complaints that have been reported. And the last one on the list is R&Co Holdings, Inc. MC number is 545-342. FMCSA shows that the Surety Bond is set to cancel on 4/20/18. They have over $150,000 in active non-payment complaints that have been reported. That wraps up this week's Bad Broker Report. Hopefully you don't have anybody that you have been dealing with on that list. And without any further ado, let's welcome our special guest for this evening, Mr. Rick Gobble. Rick, how are you this evening?
Rico, I'm just doing extremely well. As I tell people every day, I'm living large, buddy. I am blessed. So life's a beach.
Sounds good. That's absolutely the attitude to have. Well, Rick, since we are live now with the ELDs, the enforcement has begun. Where do we? What are some things that we need to be aware of and be conscious of with this, with the new implementation of this? And what are some of those things that we definitely need to make sure that we are on top of, on our P's and Q's, so that we are within the letter of the law?
Rico, before I dive into that, I really enjoyed those numbers there. I've never heard those numbers. That's fantastic information, and I think certainly for you folks who are out there trying to make a living, hauling freight every way, any kind of freight you can find or whatever you've got to haul it with, I think it's important to know what's paying well and what's not. And I also think it's important to know which brokers are taking advantage of the carriers out there. There's not many people left in this country. I talked to one last night that were former Interstate Commerce Commission employees. I was one. I worked for the ICC for 3 years. We dealt with brokers. We dealt with motor carriers. And we actually had some pretty strong enforcement against brokers who came into business, tendered out a lot of freight, then didn't pay the freight charges. And most of the time, or some of the time, those folks just ran off with the money. It's just that simple. So we really need a list, trust in which brokers we cannot trust. And a side note, I saw this week that Mr. Alan Lund of Alan Lund & Company, brokers out of California, passed away this week. He was one of the best brokers in this country.
Man.
His firm still is. And I had an opportunity to go out and do some work for them shortly after I retired. Met Mr. Allen, spent a little bit of time with him. Very interesting individual. Had an old truck out there, you know, that a real old antique truck sitting there in front of the business. So I had an opportunity to do that. And it was with a lot of sadness this week when I saw he'd passed away. I didn't want to get off on all that. Been an OICC man. Talked to another one last night for about an hour and a half. The guy trained me when I went to work for the Interstate Commerce Commission. And we had a lot of fun. We thought we were doing some good stuff. Congress didn't think so, and they shut us down in 95. I'll get it right in a minute. I had left the agency before they shut them down. I saw it coming. I said, I better go somewhere else. I went to the Federal Highway Administration in the truck safety side. Then I went to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. When it was created in 2000, I was a division administrator of the FMCSA in the Tennessee Division Office for about 15 years. Dealt with all my truckers in Tennessee. And in the last few years of my career, I spent quite a bit of time in Washington, what we call the Ivory Tower, where all the big decisions were made, you know, and I got a good insight into that. I didn't mean to get into all of that. We'll talk about ELDs, and if anybody has any questions, we'll certainly be more than glad to entertain those questions. This week, FMCSA finally put out the points that they were going to assign for violation of the ELD regulations on roadside inspections. I thought I might run through these for just a minute. The first one is no record duty status when an ELD is required. In other words, you're required to have an ELD, but you don't have an ELD. That'll carry 5 points. No record duty status when one is required or is not required, actually. But no record duty status, even though an ELD was not required. For example, our livestock haulers, and I'll come back to that in a little while. We'll talk a little bit more about the livestock transporters. But that's 5 points. Not using the appropriate method to record hours of service. I'm not sure what that is. That must just be not having either a log or an ELD, and that would carry 5 points. And then failing to provide supporting documents in the driver's possession upon request. That was interesting to me. What kind of documents is a driver required to have? So I dove into the regulations and looked at exactly what the regulation is cited for, and it basically just says any document the driver has in his possession in the form that it was provided to him. So in other words, bill of lading maybe, I guess maybe a toll ticket if you went through a toll somewhere. I'm still struggling with what some of the others may be. I mean, why did we go to ELDs? Come on, guys. We went to ELDs so we didn't have to carry a whole bunch of paperwork with us and didn't have to keep a whole bunch of paperwork in our office after we was through. But the government kind of thinks we're all criminals out here, and I'm no longer with the government. I've been retired 11 years, and they don't trust anything we do. They put the ELD rule in place because they didn't trust our paper logbooks. Of course, they had plenty of reasons not to trust our paper logbooks, but they didn't trust them. So they said, okay, we're going to make you go to ELDs. But guess what? You're still going to have to keep all these supporting documents so we can compare them to the ELD. Well, that's interesting. So we'll see where that goes. But that carries 7 points. That's the most points of any of the violations in the ELD. Operating a device that is not registered with FMCSA. Well, I think it's a carrier's responsibility if you're going to implement the ELD. You need to make sure it is a ELD registered with FMCSA. Most of the providers will tell you that. There may still be a few more out there that are not yet registered. I doubt there's too many, but there may be a few. Portable ELD not mounted in a fixed position and visible to the driver. I've seen some write-ups on that already. It just carries 1 point, but it's a violation. It'll go on your CSA scores. It'll go on your PSP, Pre-Employment Screening Program, report card that any motor carrier can get. So you want to make sure that if you're using a handheld phone or something, it's got to be mounted. So I guess we're going to spend $10, get one of the little mounts where we can mount it on the dashboard. Driver failing to maintain a user's manual, an ELD user's manual. In other words, every truck's got to have a user's manual in it so that these roadside inspectors can figure out how to use the system, how they can view it themselves, carries 1 point. Driver failing to maintain the ELD instruction sheet, same thing, carries 1 point. Driver failing to maintain instruction sheet ELD malfunction reporting requirements. So you got to have this instruction sheet that says that if this thing fails, this is what you're supposed to do. This more stuff looks me like so that we can be cited for violations out on the side of the road. Driver failing to maintain supply of blank logbooks. You got to have some blank logbooks in your truck with you. So if you don't, stop at the next truck stop. Put a book in the door pouch. Let's have a book. Let's don't get caught that one little 1 point deal there. Driver failing to make annotations when appropriate. Well, I'm not sure what they're talking about there, but it's probably like adverse driving conditions. That's one of the questions that I get more than probably anything else. Use of commercial motor vehicle, personal use. You got to annotate that on that log so that somebody can see that if you drove off route over the weekend, why you drove off route. So if you drove off route, go home, come back on the weekend where you started from, left terminal, go back home, come back to terminal next on Monday morning or something, you got to annotate that movement was use of commercial motor vehicle personal use. Let me see where I'm at. Driver failing to manually add location description. I don't know. I'm going to let you try to figure out what that one is, because the machine tells us where we are. It's got GPS tracking, you know. Driver failed to add file comments per safety officer's request. I don't know, man. That's one point. Driver failing to manually add CMV power unit number. Wow. Wow. That's a biggie. One point. Driver failed to manually add the trailer number. Wow. Why do we care? You know, when I was there, that's the kind of things I used to raise. Why do we care? Why do we care which trailer you're pulling? We're worrying about what you're doing, not what vehicle you're doing. Well, we might need to go back and make sure that there was a driver vehicle inspection report made that day. We might need to go back and make sure. I'm whining a little bit. That's kind of what they did up there in D.C. when I was around. They whined. We might want to see if that trailer had an annual inspection, you know. So, anyway, they were glad when I retired. Don't misunderstand me at all. Driver failed to manually add shipping document information. My God, I wish I knew how many wrecks we had over the years because the driver didn't enter on his logbook shipping information. There's probably none. But it's a regulation. It carries one point. Driver failed to select, deselect, or annotate special driving category or exempt status. So probably about my agriculture haulers. You know, my agriculture haulers are totally exempt from the hours of service regulation within 150 miles. And there's all kind of guidance out there. So I guess if I run the first 150 miles out, I'm exempt. And then if I go out further than that, I'm not exempt anymore. Or maybe I ran this morning agriculture and tonight I'm running outside of 150 mile radius. I got to indicate that this morning I was under the agricultural exemption. Driver failed to certify the accuracy of the information. He didn't click on I certified. One point. All this is one point. Failing to follow the prompts from ELD when editing, adding missing information. Wow. Now we get into a few higher points. Driver failed to assume or decline unassigned driving time. That's 5 points. Now that's pretty clear. You know, let me come back to that. Failing to note malfunction, it requires use of paper log. So if the thing malfunctions, I guess somehow or another you got to go in there somehow and say, I'm going to use a paper log. I'm not sure how we're going to do that. But, you know, we know that drivers are going to run out of hours. And we know that drivers are going to want to get on to the destination or get home or whatever the case may be. And we have drivers who do what? They turn the thing off or they trip the brake.
Unplug it.
unplug it, yeah. And those unassigned miles, they show up in reports. The company gets immediate reports telling them that this driver, this vehicle moved. We don't know who is driving it. Let's say that you go out today and you jump in the truck, you take off, you forget to enter your code number, and you make a trip and you never did enter. When the company always knows the vehicle's moving, and we don't know who's driving it. So that's an issue too. So that's what they put out for us this week, and I don't have any great big heartache to any of it. The problem you're going to have with ELDs that most carriers have got them implemented now. Most drivers are using them, and we're getting pretty good at it. Now, when you talk about CSASMS scores, the percentile ranking scores, that means that they're going to measure they got 5 groups of carriers, basically based on size. It's more or less a simple term, based on size of the carrier. So in that peer group, they call them peer groups, it's not going to take many violations to kick you to the top. Now, bell curve measurement system, they don't call it bell curve measurement system. That's a Rick Gobble term. They don't like that term. They call it percentile ranking. Percentile ranking in Waynesboro, Tennessee, where I grew up, is called a bell curve. If I didn't do good on a test, I prayed the teacher would curve the score. So 35% will always fail no matter how good or how bad the class is. But if you do percentile ranking and you got a carrier that gets 6, 7, 1 points at a time, he may very well be the 99th percentile, be the worst carrier out there because he had these few violations. And when you bell curve it, then all of a sudden he's the worst carrier out there because all these other carriers had no violations. So the agency is determined to keep CSA-SMS alive, even though Hank Seaton, we talked about Hank, and myself and several others worked real hard and got Congress to make them take those scores down from public view. The agency has now had conducted, it's the National Academy of Science, I think National Academy of Science, I think that's right, a study on it, how they can improve it. They're going to re-implement it. They're going to put them scores back out there. They're going to keep trying to get the brokers to only use carriers with good scores, not bad scores. If you use carriers with bad scores, they have a wreck, guess what they're going to sue? They're going to sue the broker for negligent entrustment or the shipper, whoever it may be. But anyway, that in a nutshell is where we are on ELD, SMS scoring methodology. And where do we go from here? I don't know. We'll see. But I got a feeling we're going to see more and more on this as we go along.
Okay, well, Rick, I got a couple of questions for you, and I'd definitely be remiss if I didn't tell you thank you for the kind words a little earlier about the show. We definitely appreciate that. But say, for instance, you know, most of our audience is the One Truck Charlie crowd. You know, we got guys out there that may have a small fleet or whatever, but most of this is basically small owner operators. So say, for instance,
right,
you come home for the weekend and you turn the truck in, you go drop your truck off at the mechanic shop or whatever, and the mechanic with this ELD thing, the mechanic has to work on your truck or whatever, and he needs to test drive it or whatever, and then you get a couple of miles or whatever that'll get accumulated while it may be in the possession of the mechanic. How does that, because the mechanic doesn't necessarily have a login on your ELD, and it's going to, all that stuff is going to be showing up. Just a question that I've seen that you know, how would that be handled?
I think what's going to happen is when the driver gets back in his truck and puts code in his truck, especially on the one truck guy, something's going to come up on that screen and say, you have some unassigned mileage. There's some unassigned mileage on his truck. Now, I think through annotation, that's why they use that term a lot in the ELD regulation. I think in annotation, you'll be able to go in there and you'll be able to put in there with comments who drove the truck and why. So you'd be able to say the truck was in the shop at Peterbilt of Louisville, and mechanic drove it, a test over for a few miles. That should take care of it, because the ELD tracking will show them exactly where it went. I think the most important thing to do is make sure you get it in there. If you don't get it in there, then somebody's going to think that you run around there in Louisville trying to find a load or do something of that nature, and you're trying to hide hours of service. You can get your full 10-hour break that you should have got or something like that. So be sure to go in there and annotate what happened when that truck moved and there was no driver that logged into the system to tell me he was one driving.
Got you. So we got, let's see here. I think we got someone that has a question for us calling in. Looks like Bruce has a question for us. Bruce, you're up and on board with Rico and Rick. How can we help?
Good night. Good evening, Rico. And how are you guys doing tonight?
Oh,
doing good,
well,
man.
Bruce,
living
how about
large.
Yourself?
Hey, I saw those safety score that CSA points that were coming out, and
yeah.
I don't have a big problem with most of them, but the one that I guess just gets under my skin and gets in my craw is the one about not having the ELD mounted properly.
I know, yeah.
You know, my logbook wrote on the seat, it wrote in the door panel, it wrote in the cubby hole above the, you know, it wrote wherever I stuck it for the last 40 years, and the dang thing never, ever jumped out and ran away from me. Why the heck do I have to have an ELD mounted on the dash in view of the driver?
That's so that in the event you get inspected, the officer can enter that vehicle and see that ELD. It's almost what I used to say. Sometimes these regulations are written by five-year-olds that have absolutely no background or experience in trucking. As long as a guy can hand it to you or as long as you can hold it and show it to the guy, who cares? Who cares?
Well, that's...
You know, it's always government overreach. It's them making us do things that we that this serves no safety purpose.
You know, I've looked at all the aftermarket mounting devices that they have for iPads and cell phones and whatnot, and every last one of them, they want you to stick to the windshield. And yet, several states in this country will ding you if you have anything on the windshield. So, you know,
great point.
The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing.
Well, the federal regulations, and I'm not sitting here looking at it, but if I'm not mistaken, you got 4 inches. You can't have anything on the window 4 inches. Is it 4 inches? Do you know offhand, Bruce?
I think
above
it's something
the
like
edge
that, or
the window. Three
I've
inches
also heard
or
in
something.
The sweep of the wiper too.
Yeah, but I think the agency has come out and said that if you mount something required by the regulations, for example, you know what, we got these easy pass cards and things. And they've said
right.
if it's required
right.
by the regulations, then you can mount it. So I don't think it'd be a violation, but I would try to stay away from it. It's the, you know, what is it? Let's err on the side of caution. We can't stand these scores. Let's find something that we can mount to the dash or mount to the doghouse or whatever we may have so that we don't have to run into that. Now, I tell you, UPS and them, when they first come out with these onboard recording devices years ago, buddy, they mounted them right up there in the windshield, and I don't think we could ever do anything about that.
Well,
I'm
tempted just to keep my electronic device stuck where I've had it for the last 40 years, and if an officer says something, I'll say, well, if you want to give me a point, that's on you, and you know, use your better judgment. For the last 40 years, my logbook wrote anywhere in this cab you wanted it to, and you didn't care.
Yeah. Well, the problem with that, Bruce, and I've said this a lot, of course, on the Nemo show, I've said never start feeding a bear. Because once you start feeding a bear, it's hard to stop feeding them, you know? So let's avoid everything we can. I would say that the agency has some guidance on that. Get on their website, fmcsa.dot.gov. If I'd known you was going to call in, I would have researched it and let you know. I believe we can mount it, but don't take my word for it. Let's find something that says we can mount it on the windshield, and let's don't start feeding that bear.
Well, I'm figuring out a different way because I don't like things mounted on my windshield. For one, I don't like blocking my view, and two, they never stay there. They fall off, and then you got mess.
They
know?
Do.
So,
you lick them to death, and they still fall off. Yeah. I'm with you on
that.
But hey, I tell you what, you know, where are you from, Bruce?
Kansas.
Well, you know, us in Tennessee and some of them folks from Kansas, you know, we know what sheet metal screws are. We can run sheet metal screws in them.
Yeah, I can figure out ways to do it, you know, that are my engineering methods, but.
Yeah. We call it redneck engineering in the South, you know.
Well, I've called it other things that I probably shouldn't say on the air, but anyway. So.
All right, Bruce, you got anything else for us?
Rico, you do a good job. I appreciate every time I can call in and listen to you. And it's just it's an hour of pleasure some weeks when I need something to lighten up my day a little bit.
Oh,
hey, Rico.
Definitely appreciate the kind words.
Yeah.
Hey, Rico, my dad was an owner-operator with McLean Freight Lines out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That got me through school. That got me health care, got me dental care. You know, it got me everything I got all those years. But I was enjoying your rates. You're talking about the rates of different areas, you know. And Dad ran a flatbed, a special commodity division, with McLean back in the 70s and early until deregulation. Deregulation killed them, you know, in 1980. But the late 60s and 70s and more, he hauled some good paying freight. I mean, he hauled in 1975 freight at the rate that you're talking about today. So that's kind of what deregulation did to us. I remember one time Dad got a load out of the Shenango Valley up in Ohio, there in Pennsylvania. You know, I think he's out of Youngstown, Ohio, down to Dallas. I think that thing paid $5 a mile. And that 1975, that's a lot of money. Now, the downside was, and I noticed this in your rate structure, is when they got to Dallas, they'd have sat there 4 or 5 days to get a load out. And then when they got a load out, it didn't pay nothing. So Dad and them would just deadhead back to Memphis, you know, and try to pick up some good freight, some coarse steel or some beams or something, and go back up east. And but he made some good money. And I'm those rates that you quoted, it's kind of, some of them are still pretty, in my opinion, pretty depressed. But some of those rates, if you can't make money in trucking at those rates, you probably need to get some other kind of business.
Uh-oh. Are you there, Rick?
What happened? I am.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Something happened. I had a technical glitch. My call dropped out, so I wanted to make sure everything was still up and on board right here live on the show. I don't know. I never had that happen before. Got a caller calling me in. He's got a question for us. Let's go and grab Chad. Chad, you're up and on board with Rico and Rick. How can we help?
I'm beyond help. Sir, when you were talking about that, hey, I caught a baseball in my head when I was 6 because I wasn't coordinated enough to raise the glove, and I dropped like a stuck hog, my dad said, and he said I came through 20 minutes later screaming for an icing. So, but I'm good now, thank goodness. But when you were talking about the mounting device of that ELD, man, I'll tell you what, if that might almost qualify for harassment.
I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, you know, I go to CVS. I used to go to CVSA. I've been going to the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance meetings every year for the last 5 or 6 years. That's where they write the out of service criteria. They decide what is such a defect that's likely to cause a crash or a breakdown. And they don't like me there. And I don't like them anymore. I'll be the first one to tell you that. And I think I'm going to write them a letter and tell them that I'm not going to fool with them anymore, because you got police officers writing rules. And with FMCSA, you got people sitting in there writing rules that know absolutely nothing about the trucking industry. They know absolutely nothing about what causes crashes and what doesn't cause a crash. I applaud the current administration for trying to get these government agencies to reduce some of these unnecessary regulations. If it is not likely to contribute to a crash, or if it's not likely to contribute to a breakdown, because we don't need breakdowns out there on the road either. I'm going to tell you, those things are tremendously dangerous. Then it ought not be a regulation.
I'm with you on that. And not only that, man, because, see, there's a pretty good a radio station. It's on the Internet. It's called Rule of Law Radio. And they said that in Texas, for example, if you have a CDL, whether you're driving the truck or not, and you invoke your rights, it's going to be very seriously frowned upon. You could possibly get arrested. But at the same time, you cannot be held by any peace officer for an extended period of time, because that would be illegal, and there's case law that backs that up on, and the case law where they ruled against law enforcement, they said, hey, that's harassment. And that's one of those things. The guy that writes that violation is either really desperate for a promotion, or he just is one of these things that, he's one of these guys out here that this thing structure the problem, and if you take them off the road, everything will be solved, when that's not the case. But I'll tell you honestly, when I hear you say like those small ones like that, there's a couple other ones, I don't remember exactly what you said, but I don't see them actually being enforced. I mean, and I'm looking at it from a peace officer standpoint, man. That wouldn't even be worth my time ranking somebody up on.
Well, the most dangerous people in our country are government employees that don't have enough to do, or they can't find enough violations to support their jobs. Think about
that. Oh,
that's what this is all about.
A guy I graduated high school with works in Senator Rand Paul's office, and I asked him, I said, how would I put my name on the hat for FMCSA director in the Trump? Because I would have put my name in it if I knew what to do. And he asked some people around there in Washington, and they said, if you're not, he basically said there's an inner circle there, and if you're an unknown, especially with Mitch McConnell's wife running the Department of Transportation, and I don't know what makes her qualified to be the head of the Department of Transportation, apart from the fact she's married to the old guy on the block and needs to retire and go fishing on the Kentucky lakes. He said it's the people that the person's going to get that job is on an inner circle.
Well, if you think about the guy that got the job at the Federal Highway Administration, I don't know him. I've never met him. I don't know anything about him. His name is Martinez. He was he was in charge of driver's license in the state of either New Jersey or New York. He was put up there by Chris Christie. Now, the FMCSA career bureaucrats' dream is to get an administrator that knows absolutely nothing about what they do, how they do it, or why they do it. When I was there, we call ourselves the Weebies. We be here when these political appointees get here, and we be here when these political appointees are gone. And in the meantime, it's our job to keep them focused on their ideas. Whatever we do, don't let them start drilling down into our daily activities. That's how we did it. That's what this administration said about the swamp. And while I think there's been some movement to try to help and maybe some things that have helped, I think the EPA administrator has done some good things to reduce some regulations. As far as I know, there's not been one regulation that FMCSA dropped since this administration come into office, and I don't expect there'll be one.
Now, let me ask you this. So there's been some confusion going around over the 99 motor thing, where if you have a truck with an engine that was built before 99, you can run paper. Kevin talks about it. He said it just has to be a 99 model year or older model. But my problem is what happens when you get to, like I said, with that one, somebody that's either dead name for themselves, so they can possibly doesn't understand that regulation. How do you keep put out of service? Do you subscribe to one of those legal services and get up on the phone?
Well, you know, once they put us out of service, you got to remember that the roadside inspection. Yeah, you're breaking up on me pretty bad too. I'm trying to get the most of it as I can. But you got to remember, your roadside inspection is your trial. Everything else is an appeal. Whatever you do, don't fight them at the roadside inspection. They're going to do what they're going to do, and then we have to appeal it after that. And if it means a 10 hours of off-duty time, now, what I'm waiting on, and of course, anytime you scrape together about $100,000, I know about 10 attorneys would be more than glad to take this case. If somebody puts you out of service, they were wrong. I think they're required to reimburse you for your lost time, but you're not going to get no great big settlement, and you can't spend that kind of money to fight them, and they know that. But, you know, I do data queues for drivers on a regular basis. I like to file them. I've had some battles. Alabama right now is so mad at me. The state of Alabama, if they could come up here and get me, they'd take me back down there and lynch me somewhere on an oak tree down there. And I was in Alabama last week, and I didn't bother to tell anybody I was down there. But they hate my guts over me making them. What I did, I made them give me, they you got to, I don't jump your question, Chad. I hope I answered your question. Let me tell you about this data cube. This drive, one of our driver, a driver, got stopped. The officer got him up there in a patrol car and questioned him about marijuana. And you got any marijuana, anything? You ever smoked any marijuana? And of course, the guy wasn't smart enough to say, no, I never have. But he said, oh, yeah, I've smoked a little marijuana at a different time in my life. He said, you got any on that truck? The guy said, not as far as I know. But anyway, the officer leaves the driver in the patrol car, goes back there and searches his truck, and finds a little bit of what he thinks of marijuana in that little, in a suitcase. Now, this is the driver's side. In a suitcase, you know that little, how the old suitcases used to have that little flap on the inside, and you put your toothpaste and stuff in there. And he comes back, and he's got just a little bit of what he thinks marijuana. So he says, okay, I tell you what, you ain't got enough here to bother with. I'm just going to write you a warning. And we're going to pour it out here on the ground in this mud hole here, and you're going to be able to go on. I'll put you out of service. I'm going to let you go up the truck stop 10 hours. Well, we said, first of all, you don't have any evidence it's marijuana. Second of all, when did my driver said, I never admitted to mine. I said, my son has used that briefcase, that suitcase. Maybe my son left it in there. So then the Alabama come back and said, oh, no, he confessed to it. We got it on videotape. I said, okay, that's good. Send me a copy of the videotape. No, we're not going to send you a copy of the videotape. Well, why would you not send me a copy of the videotape? We're not going to send you a copy of the videotape. I talked to the Attorney General's office in Alabama, and I said, we're going to copy the videotape. Well, 3 or 4 weeks go by, and they said, okay, I think you're going to get a copy of the videotape. I called Alabama back down there. Okay, they said we can have it. Well, they didn't tell us. They said you could have it. I mean, it's like children.
Whoa.
Finally, they agreed to give it to me last week, and then they said, okay, you got to send me a blank CD, and you got to send me a $10 fee, and you got to send me a self-addressed stamped envelope back to you, which I did, and I still don't have it. Now, my driver, you know, stories change. I don't know what's going to be on that videotape, but that'd be an interesting videotape, audio tape. It's both been taken in the patrol car, but I never seen anybody just bow up. I actually had to call the division administrator of Alabama and the field of FMCSA, the field administrator out of Atlanta, which I know them all. I worked there a long time, trained most of them, and finally had to get them involved to even get it. And I still don't have it. But yet it's on CSA, it's on SMS, carriers losing business because it's got an alert and control something. And this driver is never going to be able to get a job until this falls off of this PSP. But other than that, life's a beach. And I just move on. I'm going to go ahead and drive my tractor around a little while. That's my therapy.
Well, Rick, before we get out of here, I got a couple more calls and got some questions. But I'd like to give you an opportunity to tell the good people out there how they can get in contact with you if they need any help pertaining to data cues or any of that stuff, which is a service that you provide. How can people find you and get in contact with you?
Well, I'm not hard to find. All you got to do is look at Rick Gobble. Look at Rick Gobble on Google, and you'll find rickgobble.com. And I think I've still got my website up. I'm trying to rebuild it. I've been so busy on expert witness cases here lately. I'm on several. I do a lot of expert witness cases. I do defense. I don't do plaintiff. I would do plaintiff, I guess, if anybody ever asked me to. But I just do a lot of defense cases. I have to read a lot of depositions and file a lot of reports and things. But that's okay. I enjoy doing that. I also help a lot of carriers get out of trouble once they get conditional safety rating. I have quit. I've had to quit trying to help people once they get an unsatisfactory. I've got a poor guy up in Chicago. They've had shut down for 13 months. But rickgobble.com, if you can't find that, you'll find me on the internet. I ain't hard to find. I'm not hiding from anybody. I'm an old Tennessee boy raised up down there in the sticks. Done a whole lot better than my high school principal ever thought I would. It's just what I do. You know, I truck, drive a motorcycle, it don't matter. We didn't know growing up there wasn't anything you couldn't do. You know, we didn't know you had to have a license to do anything. We just did it. I was driving a truck for the county, 17 years old. you know, driving a low bore trailer pulling a bulldozer. I didn't know. Old boy said one day, you drive that thing. I said, if I can get her started, I can drive it. And, you know, that's just what
there
we did
go.
Down there. And figure it out later on. He said, I tell you what, if you drive that thing there in South Florida County, you get back alive and let you drive it again.
Yeah. Well, one more real quick one, and Matt, I see you. We're coming to you, coming right to you. Back to that exemption portion on the ELD. If you have a 99, what is the letter
right.
of the law? It's like sometimes you got a truck that may be registered as a 2000, but on the if you look at the
yeah.
engine stamp or something like that, it may have been manufactured in 99. How does that work out? How does that play out? Can you provide any clarity on that?
Yeah, the agency kicked that around for 6 months before they first said, well, we're going to look at the serial number, whatever the serial number said we're going to do. Then they had to go back and change it. I'm not real sure. I've got it, and I'll be more than glad to give it to somebody if they want it. But if it's a 2000, it was probably manufactured in 99. And the ECM, the problem with the truck is the ECM will not connect to the ECM receiver, and the data in the ECM will not support an ELD. That's the problem. And now you get into glider kits. What if I had an old tractor, you know, and for whatever reason I tore the cab off of it, put a glider kit on it? Well, you've got a glider kit now that's a 2005, but you've got a frame and a engine in it. But I told the story. I got a good friend that he hauls livestock. He worried death about that. But anyway, he called me one day, and I don't know if anybody knows who Fitzgerald is. Fitzgerald's kind of everybody knows Fitzgerald. But anyway, I said, I can see old Fitzgerald up there right now pulling every one of them old motors and frames out of that junkyard up there trying to get them go again so he can get more for him right now than he'd ever got for him, you know. But
yes,
anyway,
sir.
We had a lot of
yes, indeed. All right. Well, let's go before we jump. Get out of here. Let's go grab Matt real quick. Matt, you're up and on board with Rico and Rick. How can we help?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. Just a couple quick comments.
Matt.
One about the 99 engine there. I'm in that situation. It's a 99 engine. It's actually a 2002 truck. It was an older engine. It'd been rebuilt and put in this truck that long before the ELD rule ever even was announced. So not for any reason, but, and I ran the AOBR for a year now. Well, the latest update, now it no longer talks to my ECM anymore.
Yeah.
So just to be proactive until I find a new one to use, because I would prefer to be under one just for a liability issue. I got a Caterpillar engine, so I have the serial number from the Caterpillar's website, the date this engine was built, the date it was tested, the date it was shipped, all dated 99. And then I also have the email from my ELD company stating that they do not support a 99 engine.
Yeah.
So
we're good.
At least I have something to show to the officer, you know, to
that's right.
Say, hey, you know, I'm trying.
Well, hey, laminate it.
Yep.
So in case it gets wet, you know, laminate it and hang it from the sun visor, man. Do something. I don't know. But I think you're probably right. If anybody needs those guidance, drop me an email. I'll email you back the latest guidance FMCSA has about them older trucks and older engines.
Yeah. And then the mounting of the unit. That's almost a catch-22 there. You don't want to permanently mount it. It's got to be removable because one of the requirements is you have to be able to hand it to the officer and he can look at it while he's standing on the ground.
Now, I hadn't seen that. Is that in the regulation or is that truck stop law?
I'm pretty sure I read that in the regulation. I guess I'm not positive where I read that. It might have only been an article, but...
I know those units at UPS and those FedEx and them run. You'd have to do some pretty strong disconnecting. I mean, Now, I'm not arguing with Ned. I don't ever argue with anybody because a lot of times people read stuff I don't read. But, you know, I always say, where did you see that? I learned that in government years ago, you know. Never argue with a man. Just say, where did you find that? Where did you see that? I'd be glad to look at it. So go back and look at that again. I've not seen that. That doesn't mean you're not right.
Yeah, I'll double check on that one. And the comment about the government, we call that the good old boy club.
It is. And hey, I was part of it. You know, I was part of it for 32 and a half years. And every time somebody attacked us, what's the first thing we did? We circled our wagons.
We had
how do I respond? If we got a letter and it was from a congressman or senator, we got to huddle together. How are we going to respond to this? How are we going to defend ourselves? And when I was young, I thought that was what I should be doing. But as I got older, I got thinking, hey, this ain't right. You know, when I went to work for the government, I was told I was a public servant. And I took an oath of office. The people now are told they're government servants. There's a great big difference in a public servant and a government servant.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, our government is of the people, by the people, for the people. But
that's
they're
right.
There now to protect themselves, yeah.
That's right. You're exactly right. And I've said that 100 times. I think we need to go back to like we were. You know, somebody called me, what can I do to help you? That's my job. But that's, you know, time's gone by, man. Well, good talking to you, Nat.
Yep, you guys have a good evening.
All right,
Matt, we appreciate it. And we want to thank Rick for taking time out of his schedule to come on board and chat with us here for the past hour and kind of inform us and keep us up to date on what's going on and get us, make sure we're on the straight and narrow when it comes to the ELD compliance mandate. To thank Kevin and Lisa Rutherford for providing us with the platform to be able to bring this show to you on a weekly basis. And last, certainly not least, we want to thank you guys, the listeners, for taking time out of your schedule to participate, download, tell a friend to tell a friend, listening in with us. We definitely appreciate all your support in helping us bring the show to you. Last and not least, I would like if you guys could shoot me some information over on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page. I am going to be participating in Randall Riley is having a R-Squared convention over in Tuscaloosa, Alabama on the 24th. And I've been privileged enough to actually be on the panel with Randall Riley, and they're going to be talking about driver respect. Want to know what are some things that out there that you guys can throw, just different things, different experiences that you have seen or come across as far as driver disrespect and different things that you've had to contend with, so that I can also add that to some of the things that I have personally experienced, so we can kind of give a real-world synopsis on this panel that we're going to be attending on Tuesday. I definitely would appreciate some of you guys' feedback on that. And with that being said, Rick, anything you want to say closing us out?
No, hey, Rico, I like the name of this show, Rick and Rico.
We might be on
a good ring. had a good ring to it, didn't it? Now I said
yes,
Rick
sir.
And Rico.
Yes, sir.
I didn't say Rico and Rick. You noticed that, didn't you?
it don't matter. I'm one of those guys. I don't need to be on the front line. Long as I'm in the building, I'm happy.
Well, I enjoyed it. Appreciate you calling me. Appreciate the opportunity to participate in it. Maybe we do it again one day.
Absolutely, Rick. I definitely appreciate it. Thank you again for taking time out of your schedule to join us.
All right, man. Have a good
day.
Everybody
said,
be safe out there.
Yes, sir, you too. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, God bless you. Good night, and we'll see you, God willing, and we'll talk with you same time, same place next week. And until that time, you guys keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and we'll talk to you later. God bless you. Good night.